Hi, this is Jerry Ball, and you're listening to The Grueling Truth.
Welcome to The Grueling Truth NFL Legends Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo, an interactive football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and see what all other fans have called also. Check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. I'm your host for The Legends Show, Mike Goodpaster, and we have a special guest tonight. Our guest played over a decade in the NFL as a kick returner and a wide receiver for the Steelers, Panthers, and Jets. Please help me welcome to The Grueling Truth, Dwight Stone.
Hey, thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate you having me on your show.
It's great to have you on. So let's just go to the beginning. When did you start playing football, and who were some of your early influences?
I started playing in 10th grade. Some of the early influences, Walter Payton. I love watching him run. I wasn't a big sports fan, but I saw this guy for the Chicago Bears, number 34, and I said, man, this guy really goes at it. And no matter how big the person he's going against, he's always four speed. And I was like, wow. And I also, I used to read the Sports Illustrated, and I read that one time, Herschel Walker workout. It's where he never used any weight. He just did plyometrics and things like that. And I actually started doing his workout, and what he was saying is true. I mean, I was able to do pretty much every workout with my body weight doing different things than which he put in a book.
Yeah. All right, so you get to high school. Like I said, you started 10th grade. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your high school career and what led you to Middle Tennessee State?
Okay. Yes, I started playing football because my friends played. How about that one? After school, there was really no one to play with after school. Most of my friends played football, so I tagged along on this game of football. 10th grade, I picked it up. Didn't really have a strong interest in it just because my friends played. I was kind of tagging along. 10th, 11th grade, 12th grade came through. I had planned to go to the Marines. That was my ultimate goal. I had a mom who worked very hard for her family, single mom. I had four brothers and two sisters. And I just wanted to go into the field of the Marine, because I thought it was something that really stood strong for the United States, and I've always liked their uniforms. So as I went through, I got to my senior year. I had no clue about football, didn't even have it in my picture. My mom approached me one night and asked me, out of all my brothers, I'm next to the youngest on the totem pole, and she said, why don't you pursue football, little father? And I always told my mom, hey, if you could find a football team with a military background, I have no problem approaching it, you know, doing it. So I graduate in May. In April, she came to me, and she had a brochure. It was Merriam Military Institute. That's where I started my career at. I went there with a friend, looked around, beautiful college. Most people who come there, they get second lieutenant status, and they go to West Point, Citadel, Texas A&M, Naval Academy. That's what they're known for. And when I got there, and I was there with my friend, I was tagging along with him and his dad, and I met pretty much everybody there, hierarchy. And they asked me, do you ever, you know, think you can come to school here? The school cost more than what my mom was making a year. I said, I'm going to be honest with you, there's no way I can afford to come to school here. I'm just going to be straight up with you. And they told me, hey, there's a acceptance test that I can try taking and see where I scale out at. And from there, they'll talk to me if I did well. So I took the test. 2 hours later, they came in and said, hey, you did very good on the test. This is what we can do for you. We can offer you a partial scholarship. They have grants out there that can help you along. And from there, I hung around. I got to meet Colonel Murphy, who became very good friends. He was the head guy over at the whole university or the military school. His great-great-grandfather started it. And I say I was there for a year and a half, and I went to Middle Tennessee. And from there, I had planned to finish up school and going off to the military. But some scouts saw me while they were watching my roommate in Middle Tennessee and said, who's the guy behind you? Just so happened to be me. And he asked me, did I ever thought about pursuing football after college? I said, no, I want to get commissioned, go on second lieutenant, and move on from there. And the guy, check this out. You'll love this. The guy who put my name out there from Cincinnati, he was Cincinnati Bengals, the scout who saw me. And he said, hey, Dwight, you know, it's late. The draft is going to happen. What I can do is put your name out there and hopefully, you know, someone you can hook on with somebody from free agency. And from there, he did that. I visited a couple of teams. I prayed about it. And the wildest thing about it, when I prayed and asked God, you know, to show me what team to pick, I was doing something with a friend. And after I visited Pittsburgh, there was a people selling rugs and pictures on the side of the road. And when I went over there to look at them, you know, you just look at the stuff on the side of the road, there was Pittsburgh Steelers, Three River Stadium right there on the first picture. And that's how I chose Pittsburgh.
Well, I'll tell you.
How about that story?
Pittsburgh, but all right. your time at Middle Tennessee State, I mean, the coach there at that time was Boots Donnelly, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay, you want to talk a little bit about your relationship with Boots? Because Boots, a lot of guys, a lot of people never heard of, did an unbelievable job of turning that program around.
Oh, yes, he did. As a matter of fact, I talked to Coach Donnelly probably. We have like something happening, an event over at the Middle Tennessee, and I try to get back for, you know, when I can. And Coach Donnelly is like that dad that you never had. And when I went to the NFL and we went there, practice, and this is going to sound weird, but it's the truth. I was at a 1AA school, Middle Tennessee. I worked harder at that school than I worked in the pro NFL. Because he demanded so much from you, and he gave it to you. He's the type that's going to beat you down. He's going to drive you. He's going to push you. And at the time, being a young man, you know, thinking like, oh, this guy's getting on my nerves. And it's always the old saying, he said, as long as I'm getting on to you, that means I care. It's when I quit getting on to you, and you know you're doing wrong, and you see me looking at you and I don't correct you, then I'm giving up on you. And thank God he didn't give up on me. He's a hardworking coach. When I go to Middle Tennessee, I always look him up because this guy right here has been a blessing for me. They say God put people in your lives. And it's just amazing, you know, growing up a black male and growing up in the project and coming out. And people, you know, the way things are going now is a shame with the racial and everything. My mentor is, well, pretty much all white males throughout my high school, throughout Middle Tennessee, throughout Marion, who was Coach Hooker was my mentor. Then I had Coach Donnelly, my mentor. Then I had Coach Noel, who's my mentor, and it's just amazing how God, you know, put that in people in my way. And it's just, I want to trade it for the world, you know, and people always look at color, and thank goodness when we was out there on the field and the things we did, it was all about what you did. It wasn't about, you know, oh, you did this, you know. If you did the job and you did what you're supposed to, you would play. If you didn't do what you're supposed to, you'd be cut, or, you know, your scholarship would be taken away from you, depending on what level of football you're playing.
Yeah. All right, now, we talked, you weren't drafted, you were an undrafted free agent, you went with the Steelers. That first camp, was there any players or coaches that helped you adjust to the NFL, and what was it like that last day when you found out you'd made the team?
It was wild. When we got there, Coach Snow, they have this test that after practice you got to run – three 50s. That's pretty much I think it's like that. Yeah, it's around the football field. You run around it, you'll stop, you'll check your pulse. You run around it, you stop, you check your pulse. And this was Coach Noel's way of saying if you came in shape. And thank goodness it worked out because it worked out where I stood out because I believe in when you go somewhere, you should be at your best. And thank God it showed up. And Coach Noel pulled me aside. He said that I like that you came in shape. You're taking this very seriously. And he said, I keep an eye on you. And as things got to going, I played running back. And after practice, Coach Noel said, hey, Dwight, I want you to stay after practice. I'm thinking like, oh, man, what does this mean? I mean, I'm gone already? He said, no, I want you to show you how to return kicks, because I never return kicks. He said, I'm going to try to prolong your career in the NFL. You know, I'm thinking like, okay, if I got Coach No, here's a guy who had four Super Bowls, taking time with a guy from me, from Middle Tennessee, a free agent, a guy from Florella. I'm from Florella, Alabama. That's where I'm from. Population 2,000-something. And he took his time out with me, and he showed me techniques of doing things. He showed me how to adjust to things. And this, I mean, you talking about a God-sent guy. I mean, Mr. Rooney's the father. And I mean, I can tell you stories that will blow people's mind that they don't even know about the Rooneys. They're so private. But when they do things for people, it's just amazing. But, yeah, as I got to at the end of camp, they knocked on my door, and it was, like, next to the last cut. I'm like, oh, man, it's me and another guy, Mike Clark. I played against him. He's in Youngstown, Akron. He's a good running back. And they knocked on the door. I said, uh-oh. I said, you hear that, Mike? He said, yeah. He said, I don't hear nothing. I said, yes, you do. I answered the door. He said, I'm not answering the door. I said, you answer it. So they used the key and opened it. I'm like, oh, my goodness. I said, well, we're gone. They said, where's Mike yet? He looked around. I said, he's over there. Pretending he's asleep. He said, Mike, come with me. So that's called, like, the, I guess, the guy who, what they call him, a name. But, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, there you go. There you know, yes. When he comes around, you hear that door, you're like, oh, man. So the last game, we moved into Pittsburgh, and it's like for the final cut. And it was going, and they haven't made the decision. I'm thinking around like, okay, can we go? Everybody go over to the stadium. I'm sitting at my supposedly be locker. Mr. Rooney, now check this out. This is so cool. Mr. Rooney, the senior, came up to me, and now everybody on pins and needles, you know, thinking like, oh my goodness, he walking toward me. I'm thinking like, is he coming toward me? This is Mr. Rooney. He said, hey, how you doing? I'm doing fine, sir. How you doing? He said, hey, you're the fast one, aren't you? I said, sir, I'll be the fast one, the slow one. I'll be whatever you want me to be right now. He started laughing. He said, no. He said, congratulations on making the team. I'm thinking like, wait a minute. I haven't spoken to a scout. I haven't spoken to Coach No. I have the owner of the team come up to me and say, congratulations. And he said, you're the only free agent that made the team. I'm thinking like, oh, Mr. Rooney, I said, I really appreciate it. I said, I'll try to live up to your expectation. I said, I'll do anything to tarnish the Steeler name. I said, you better believe it. I'm going to give it my all when I'm here. And he said, he walked away. I'm thinking like, oh, my goodness. See, I'm still waiting for the scout to tell me, to give me the real deal, you know, hear from them. But I had the owner, then I had Coach No and the scouts. They told me after about 30 minutes later after him that I made the team. And it was just mind-blowing that he came up to me. And the nicest family.
What is your first thought, or what is your first recollection of the first game, NFL game you played in?
We played the Washington Redskins after they won the Super Bowl, and we played in Washington. I don't remember too much about football, but we played in Washington, D.C., and I got to meet Darryl Green. I'm like, oh, man, that's Darryl Green. You know, I know how he is. Nicest guy. Oh, my goodness. And got to meet lots of guys on the other side, and just the atmosphere is like, okay, wait a minute. I'm in Washington, Redskins, and I'm on theirs, and they just won Super Bowl. I mean, it's like an awe. It's like you can't put it in words. It's one of those things that people say, it's like Christmas, having Christmas every day when you play in the NFL. It's just you getting paid and you're enjoying what you want to do. I didn't consider it work. I thought it was like, you're going to pay me to work out that I used to do it for free? You're going to pay me to... I said, you ain't got to worry about it. I'm going to do it anyway, but if you're going to pay me, thank you very much. Yes. God is just great.
Now, you talk a little bit about Chuck Noll. I think he's a guy that really gets overlooked when you talk about the greatest coaches in the history of the game.
Yes.
I think he's got to be top three or four just with what he did. You want to talk a little bit about Chuck Noll and his style of coaching?
Yes. Coach Noll, and I got a story to tell you about him, too. His style of coaching is amazing because he looks at the individual on how hard they work. He's old school. He ain't about, okay, I'm ready to play on Sunday. It's like, what you going to show me on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, throughout the week to get to Sunday? If you're not able to show me during the weekdays, you're not going to show me on Sunday because you're not going to be playing. And now, I'm, you know, things different than what it is back then to now. I'm sure they probably said the same thing before me. It's different than then. But back then, it's like we used to be on Friday. Friday, I never forget this. Friday, we used to be live goal line. Everybody put their pads on. It was like you was in the game. I was like, oh, see, to me, it didn't bother me because I'm used to it in Middle Tennessee. I'm used to things like that. So the people that got there, a lot of people, you know, came from different major universities, you know, Notre Dame, Clemson, Purdue, Texas, Baylor, wherever they came from. They weren't used to it. But to me, I grew up with that. So I'm thinking like, hey, let's go with it, you know. And it was just funny, you know, that it was like that. And the story I was going to tell you about Coach Snow was, I think it was after our first game at home. I walked through. There's certain ways you can go out of Three River Stadium back then. You can go out through the Pirates entrance, or you can go out through the front entrance, or there's another exit you can go out. Different exits you can go out of. So I went. I didn't know any better. I came through the front one, you know, and people out there, they want you to sign things. I said, they don't have a clue who I am, but I sign. So all of a sudden, the doors to the entrance open up. And I see everybody just leave and run to the air. I'm like, man, who is this coming out? Coach Snow and his wife. I was like, wow. Now, mind you, now this guy could have went out of two other exits, and they couldn't. He walked, he said, hold on. He walked, he had a Buick, I think an electric 225 or a Buick. Anyway, he walked over there, it was hot. He walked, opened the door for his wife, put his wife in the car, walked around to the driver's side, turned the car on, put the AC on, walked back around in front of his car and started signing autographs. Now, here's a guy could have had a limousine. Here's a guy could have went out two other exits, and he sat there and signed everybody autograph who wanted one.
Says a lot.
I'm like, how in the world can I ever turn anyone down for anything after seeing that? And Coach Noel always said that, you know, give out autograph while you can, because one day they're not going to want it.
Yeah.
I said, wow. But I saw that. It was just mind-blowing. And he remember little things that I tell him. He said, you love red? I said, yeah, I love red. I had a little Bronco was red and everything. He always remembered that, too. I'm thinking, like, now here's a guy. Now think about all the guys he have coached, all the years he have coached, and everything he's done that he could have been office. You know, he could have been his own. You know, I don't want to talk to y'all. My assistant coach can handle you. He was hands-on just like the Rooney family, ideal family.
Yeah, and there's not enough people like that nowadays in any walk of life.
It is not. I mean, you're talking about a genuine family, because one time I threw a football in the stands after I scored a touchdown. I was so excited, and I tossed it in the stands, somebody I knew. And I ran to the sideline, and Louis Lips said, oh, man, great touchdown, but that's going to cost you. That's what you mean. He threw the football in the stands. He said, you ain't making that kind of money. I said, I know, but I know that's going to cost me. He said, yeah, you can't do that. He's a young buck, you know. So on Monday, the following day, Mr. Rooney called me and he said, Dwight, come here. He said, great game yesterday. He said, you know, you got a letter from the NFL, you know, that you threw the ball in the stands and that's a fine for that. He said, don't worry about it. We'll pick it up for you. And don't even think a second about it. You know, we appreciate you. You know, you're being a Steeler. I was like, what? I said, I think I hugged him or something like that. I don't know if a man hug. Oh, he thought I was a freak. But, yeah, I gave him a hug. I said, Mr. Rooney, I said, I didn't know it was a penalty for doing that. I said, you know, I said, I want to tarnish your name. He said, no problem. Excitement. The fan enjoyed it. He said, But yeah, the league's kind of, you know, they want no one fighting for the ball. If someone get hurt, that's the reason for that. It's the next time you just hand it to someone. If you hand it to them directly, then they know who's getting it. If you're throwing it in the stands, everybody's thinking it's a free for all ball. I said, yes, sir.
Yeah.
I said, never happen again. And he did the same thing with my contract. I think some incentives I didn't reach, they gave them to me. I was like, and I got a check. I was like, this is not my money. I said, Mr. Rooney, I want to call you. The check is wrong. I said, I didn't reach a lot of these incentives on here that you paid me for. He said, Dwight, you had a good year. He said, I appreciate your honesty. He said, we know that. We just want to say good season. I said, wow. Yes. That's the Rooney
family.
Well,
that's why they're always good. I mean, they're loyal to the players. They're loyal to their coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
I mean, the players and coaches appreciate that.
Yes, it is.
Now, you were a kick returner your first 3 or 4 years. I don't think you really moved to wide receiver to what, your fourth or fifth year in the league?
Yes. Coach knows. It was an experiment, he said. He said, Dwight, I know you came in as a running back. He said, adjusting to the NFL as a receiver is going to be hard. He said, you're going to be ridiculed through the media. He said, I was right. He said, but look at the big picture. You're going to prolong your career. He said, just trust me. And he said, you know, it's have a hard shell. You know, always, no matter what people say to you, you know, he said, I'm working on being better. You know, of course, I've made a mistake. He said, always be a stand-up guy. Don't try to hide behind something and move on. And sure enough, like you said, I was a kick returner and went to running back, and then moved to receiver through Coach Noel doing an experiment. So he said, the more you can do in the NFL, the longer you'll be around. So.
Now, 1991, at the end of the season, Chuck Noll retired. How did that affect you? In the
I thought I retired too. I mean, for not retiring body wise, but I think it's when I was finally coming around, understanding the receiver, because he was there for me, he mentored me, and once he left, I was shocked and disappointed, being selfish, like that. But, you know, they had Coach Carroll come in. And I know I'm not a Carroll guy. I'm a Chuck Noll guy. And I know when you get a new coach in, you know, they're going to want to change things gradually. And I know it's going to happen. And I didn't – whatever he wanted me to do, I was there because the Rooney family, what they did for me, gave me an opportunity. And so whatever he wanted me to do position-wise, I wasn't going to argue with it. Wasn't going to make a ruckus about it. And yes, whatever happened, happened, you know. So that's how that went.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think you were really lucky to be with a coach like Chuck Noll, owners like the Rooneys.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about Steeler fans?
Oh, the Steeler fans? Oh, man, you're talking about, I know you're the bingo, welcome to the jungle, but I tell you, the jungle.
You didn't bring it up, man.
Oh, I did bring it up. Oops. Oh, yeah, that did kind of bring it up.
We won a playoff game when I was like 20 years old, now I'm almost 50.
Oh, you're still a baby. Oh, my goodness. I remember when I was 50. Okay, anyway. But, yeah, the fans are like, I mean, no matter, put it this way, I was traveling with my family in the mountains in North Carolina, and we were doing something. We were doing for Thanksgiving, me and my wife and my three girls and my father-in-law and mother-in-law, and I see a tag from Florida, and it had Pittsburgh Steelers around it. And we're just talking about different things. He's talking about some of the things. I said, oh, really? You know, he said, uh-huh. I mean, he told me, you're a Steelers fan? I said, yeah, I'm a big Steelers fan, you know. And we got to talking, and just so happened, it was just amazing because he was from Pittsburgh, and he said, we started talking. Somehow got on the name, you know. He said, yeah, you know, these are certain people. He said, and he mentioned my name. I said, really? I was playing him along to see what he would say about me. He said, yeah. He said, yeah. I said, if I tell you something, I said, between me and you. He said, okay, what is it? I said, I told you if I played for the Steelers. He said, oh, no way. You're kidding me. I know you're kidding me. I said, yes. And I said, you said one of the guys that you kind of liked, you know. You know, I told him it was me. And we had the best conversation. But, I mean, you can go anywhere around here. I mean, I go to places like, I would not believe, Pittsburgh Steelers fans are crazy I mean, when they say steal a nation, it is steal a nation. The Cowboys.
Well, I think a lot of that was all the steel mills and everything shutting down in the 70s. And
yes, you know.
Kind of fanning out all over the place.
You know, I never thought about that. I never thought about that. You know, and that's probably true. But I tell you, down here in Carolina, where I'm at, when they play the Panthers, it's more black and gold than there is blue. Mm-hmm.
But there weren't many Panther fans till this year, I don't think.
Yeah, I think everybody was, you know, people, they'll hide until things start to perk up and they'll peek their head out the hole. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Panthers came along. They had a great year. And if you find out people, oh, yeah, I'm from Carolina. But before then, I grew up down there, but no one really wore it. But they had a good season this year.
Well, let's talk about that. You left Pittsburgh after the 94 season. You guys had been upset in a championship game by the Chargers. What
mm-hmm.
prompted that move, and how difficult was it for you?
What prompted the move was I knew it was time for me to find a new location. Because I knew me and Coach Coward, well, we wasn't, I wasn't his guy. You know, I mean, we spoke, we were very nice, cordial to each other, never a disagreement. But I love Coach Capers. Oh, my goodness. You're talking about a wonderful man. I mean, I love him to death. When he went down, he said, Dwight, I'm going down to Carolina. I'm starting a new squad, new team. And my contract was just finished, with Pittsburgh. And he said, hey, I'd like for you to be a part of it. He said, I know what kind of guy you are. I spoke to the rooms, what kind of guy you are. He said, I see you every day, how you carry yourself. And he said, would you love to come down? I said, oh, Coach, I said, that'd be great. I said, I know you. I said, yeah, I trust that, I'm going to do his best and work hard for you. So I got to know him, his wife, Karen. But, yeah, I went down here, and the Richardsons are another great family. I mean, it's
yeah. I mean, I've had a few players that have played for Mr. Richardson also, and the thing is, this it was a lot like the Rooneys would be my guess, just from what I've heard of Jerry Richardson.
Hmm. And funny you say that, because Mr. Richardson told me when I met him that he is trying to, copy what the Steelers have and bring it down to Carolina. And you're talking about a nice man. I mean. Great family man, old school. He's all about, hey, you're going to bust your behind or you're not going to be here. And it's wild because I forgot to know him. I do a lot down here for him now because I'm in the area as alumni, and I do a lot for them during game day, and they have other events that I participate in. When I went to a police academy after I retired from the football, I'm in there. And lo and behold, guess who showed up? Mr. Richardson. At my graduation for the police department, he showed up. Donnie Shell showed up. Gene Brown, the head of security, showed up. And the population guy showed up. He said, Stoney, you didn't think I was going to let you graduate without me congratulating you? I was like, now here's a guy, Mr. Richardson. And this is like the bigger. He takes like 4 or 5 hours out of his day to come over there to watch me graduate from the academy. And he said, yeah. Well, I'm very proud of you. You represent the Panthers very well and the Charlie. So, if you ever need anything, let me know. And I just walked out there and I saw him looking like he said, Stoney. I knew what he said. That I knew whose voice that was. I was like, what? Yeah, him, Donnie Shell, and the guys was there.
Well, you can't beat that. If there were more owners like that, I mean, the NFL would be a lot better place.
Yes.
Which takes us into you, as you said, you graduated from the police academy. What mm-hmm. made you want to go into that line of work?
I've always, growing up where I'm from, I grew up in a place called Florella, F-L-O-R, that stands for Florida, A-L-A, stands for Alabama. It's called Florella, Florida, southern borderline of Alabama and Florida. And down there, growing up, there was lots of people down there who dealt drugs, and you see things, and he just always said that, Lord willing, I'm going to reach back and help out an individual who, no matter what town I'm in, and try to help them out. And because that really, I think there's a lot of people in my eyes, better athletes than I was, but they got hung up with the wrong crowd, got doing the wrong stuff. And their career got, side Yeah, and it's just God. God has told me something. I was going to law enforcement. I gave back. You know, I did it for 13 years. I just retired last year. I was a school resource officer, and I love my students. I love seeing them from middle school, high school, grow up, and then run into them on the streets and still seeing them and them saying, hey, Officer Stone, I appreciate what you've done for me. You know, taking that extra day, you know, reading the Bible to me, getting on to me when I should be in class, laughing with me when, you know, when I wanted to cry. It's that's one of the most fulfilling jobs there is when I was a police officer.
All right, so what are you doing with your time these days? I know we talked the other day. You said you went on a mission.
Yes. Matter of fact, our church just came back from a mission trip. It's in Ridgecrest, North Carolina. We took the youth up for a week, about 4 or 5 days. And what we do is mission is give back, going into Asheville, and we're showing them, like in the housing project, you know, how Section 8 and how people are struggling, you know, seeing different type of things that's going on and seeing how blessed you are. Because I told them, I said, my daughters, I have three. I said, you know what? I said, Daddy grew up in the housing project. I said, there, Dad. I said, see that little kid running around there? That was me right there. That was Daddy right there at one time. You know, here, you know, you only have limited things you can do. But my mom always never once complained. She worked 2 or 3 jobs. Never wanted assistance. She was a very prideful lady, and I think that's why I got most of my pride. I'm very humble, but for me to take something or like charity, I can't do it. I can't find a reason why I would. If I got my health and strength, I don't believe in that entitlement. Entitlement in our country, people are taking advantage of it. I think that's why we're in debt now. Because people sit on their behind, everybody want a handout. They should get out there and find a job, even if it's not the job you want. Just go out there and work hard. And I mean, that's
yeah, but I
to
think
me.
Anymore, Dwight. The problem you got is the government wants us entitled.
Yeah, you go. That's right.
Away,
there you
there's
go.
Nothing you can do about it.
Exactly.
I mean, you can want to work and do something,
yes.
But there's nothing to do because all the jobs are in other countries.
Exactly, and it, like I say, and you get better benefits if you don't do anything.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
if it's a $10 an hour job,
yeah.
And you can have welfare food stamps, it costs
you
money
yes.
to do that.
Yes, yes.
And the thing is this, if you give people stuff, whether
that's
it's
right.
food, money, whatever,
yes.
then you can do whatever you want to them, and they'll let you do it because they don't want to lose what they've been given.
There you go, because if you quit doing that, then they can lose their job, you know, and they can lose their votes, you know. And that's
yeah.
how they keep people. And I work with kids, you know. I can tell them, I said, don't get caught up in that cycle of like a whirlpool or, you know, you're staying in there because, you know, generation to generation stays in there. Someone has to branch out of there to make everybody else realize that, hey, there's a way out. You know, look at so-and-so. And there are lots of guys in the NFL, you know, have stories similar to mine. It's just a matter that, you know, use them in the right way.
Yeah, and let's face it, in school anymore, they're not teaching kids anything except to regurgitate information that they teach them.
And then what they want to do, because they get a bonus, if you're a teacher, if you score this high, and all they do, they're not teaching them anything. They're teaching them this core thing. They want them to study for a test that they're going to get at the end of the year. Forget about what you learned. I want you to study for this test so you can pass it. It makes our school look better, and it makes us look better. But you didn't learn anything, you know. But, yeah, it's a shame. God knows it's
yeah,
a shame.
And they don't teach a sick kid what his rights are. I mean, there's nothing
right.
on the Constitution hardly anymore.
No. Oh, come
I mean,
on.
They want people dumb and feeling entitled.
There you go. They want to keep you.
And the problem is this anymore. Everybody talks about the racism stuff.
I
think it's more of a rich people, poor people thing anymore.
See. Mm-hmm. I keep telling people, I say, you know, I wrote something about being a police officer, you know. I say, you know, growing up at the police department of Charlotte-Mecklenburg, I work with black, white, green, yellow, whatever color you can name, and all of them are great people. And I seen bad black officers, and I seen bad white officers, I seen bad Chinese officers. I say there's no one particular side on who, and I've seen them be bad on people of any color that I've been around. So people can't sit here to me and say that you know, the police officers are corrupt, you know, because they're killing blacks, you know. It's so probably 1-2% that makes it bad for other people, you know, that's it's going to magnify it. Show the things that the other officers are doing good. Magnify that. You know, you won't sell
paper. Yeah, but
they
don't want to magnify that because
that's
it
right.
doesn't get ratings. And it
doesn't, there you go. It doesn't sell papers. It doesn't sell
it's
news.
It's just like,
news.
I mean, you can go on YouTube, find all kind of videos of white
yes.
people being beaten by cops. But they don't put that on the air.
No.
You know, who cares about that? That doesn't
exactly.
get everything stirred up.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing about me, I tell people I shoot from the hip, you know. I don't care if you're black, green, white, or purple. If you're wrong, you're wrong, you know. And I call people out. And people say, oh, you know, you don't want to. I said, you know what? At the end of the day, I'm going to be straight up, you know. I'm going to call it out. And everybody, all my friends who know me, ask them that they know Stone. He don't care who you are. If you're wrong, he's going to call you out. You know, if he's wrong, you know, you call him out, I'll stand up guy. I'll say, yep, I was wrong, man, you know. But I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, man, you know, people are looking for something to complain about. Can't use the word on you. Complain about, you know.
You wanted to say bitch in that
one. you said it. And the bad thing about that is that we had something in our Bible study. It said if you say something and people know you meant something else and you're thinking it, so why don't you go ahead and say it because you say it anyway. I'm like, oh,
well,
man.
I mean, the bad thing is if you watch TV now, they
yes.
will bleep out
oh,
the
man.
F word. But
yes.
if somebody says GD, they won't.
Yes, there you go. I'm glad you said that.
Because
there
you
know,
this
go.
Is my rule. I mean, I've coached football. The last 5 years I've been a head coach for indoor football team, professional team. And,
oh,
and
man.
My rule is this. I don't care what you say.
Hmm?
I just don't ever want to hear the Lord's name in vain.
There
because
you
in
go.
The Bible, that is the only word that it says that
there
you
go.
Are not supposed to say.
All the words that you can choose in the Webster Dictionary and some that people make up, you don't have to use God. You like me. Yeah, I said don't ever use
no,
God.
No, I mean like the F word. I mean, it was a
yes.
man-made word.
Yes,
it's just
yes.
a word. And
it's
people
word.
Freak out. But,
yes.
you know, they'll let GD slip through.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Nobody wants question that. You know, oh, okay, it's just okay. There's nothing about that, you know. Yeah.
Oh, the funny thing is my son plays select baseball. He's 15 years old. He's 16 now. But he started playing on a new team this year. And the guy that's the manager asked me to coach with him. And he knows that I don't like the use of that word. But it's
yes.
it was his favorite word at the start of the year. By the time we was halfway through the season, he would say it. He would look at me, and he would immediately apologize. And I'd say, I'm not the one you got to apologize to.
That's right. I'm not the one you got to answer to. When you knock on that door, and that
hey,
door doesn't
last
open.
Six games, I never
yeah.
heard it once.
Yeah, they, see, and you know what? He probably think that he probably happy that you're helping him. Because a lot of people were just as bad as he is. If you see somebody doing wrong and you don't correct them, you're just as wrong as the person that's doing it. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I keep telling people, I say, if I call you, I say, call me. I say, hey, one thing about me, call me out. I'm like, oh, man, yeah, you got me. I was wrong. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well,
oh,
you
yes.
know, anymore, the truth is not something that people really hold up to a standard that they want to attain.
No.
I mean,
truth
we're in a
is,
country where you got Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton running for
oh,
president.
Oh, my goodness
that
gracious.
Tell you the kind of shape this country is.
Me and you can run for office.
Oh, we're both qualified. Cause,
yes.
I mean, I've seen enough. I mean, come on. Donald Trump yesterday in a speech in Cincinnati was talking about how great a guy Don King is. I do a boxing show, too, and I know Don King is not a great
you,
guy.
What,
number
now,
one,
wait
he beat
a minute.
Man to death in the late 50s.
Wait, yeah, don't worry about that. Yes. Don King, the biggest crook around. Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. No, he didn't say that.
Yeah, and I've interviewed guys like Tim Witherspoon for our Boxing
oh,
Legends show.
Yes,
yes. Tim could give you 10 hours of why Don King's a piece of crap.
Oh,
I mean, we already know what the Clintons are. They've already proven that.
They've proven
so.
It. Yes, yes, yes. And my thing is, you know, no matter who Donald Trump walk in and the ring whip, he all working out with the winner. No matter who it is, he's always on the winner's side. When they start showing the winner, he's over there, that hair.
Well, I remember the perfect one. I think it was Foreman and Frazier.
Yes.
He walked in with Frazier. Frazier gets knocked out. He jumps over top of Joe Frazier to hug George Foreman.
George Foreman. Yes. Yes. He was, to him, he was never wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's him.
So, I mean, that'll tell you what kind of shape the country's in when
oh,
you
my
have
goodness
that as
gracious.
A choice. And really anymore, I don't even think it's a choice. I think Hillary wins. I think it's hands down because I don't think anything here is on the up and up anymore.
But it is a shame, too. I told my wife, I think we're going to move to an island, you know, and just take it from there. Have our girls come visit us when they want to, and it will be on the island. They can come on over, and we'll stay over here. So.
Well, as soon as we get more sponsorships for the radio show, we'll go with it.
Hey, sounds good. I have a place for you, but the only thing is you got it. It'll have Steelers on it, not Bengals.
No, I can't have Steelers stuff on it. What do you care? You're a Steelers fan. I'm a Bengals fan. It just means you get to make fun of me constantly.
Well, you know what? We'll share the island, okay? We'll share.
All right.
We'll show that we can work together.
Yeah, we do one side in orange and the other side in black and gold, I guess.
Oh, yes.
But, Dwight, hey, it was great having you on the show. Would love to have you back more.
Hey, I appreciate it, my brother. Have a blessed one, and may God watch you and your family always.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dwight.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys, that was Dwight Stone from the Pittsburgh Steelers, Carolina Panthers. Make sure you check us out next week, next Wednesday night. We'll have Anthony Carter, former Minnesota Vikings star, former Michigan Panther, Oakland Raiders star in the USFL. Go to grillingtruth.net. Check out all of our shows. Gridiron Mo, of course, go there, www.gridironmo.com. Check us out on iHeart, iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher. Tune in. Just about everywhere you'll find podcasts, you'll find The Grueling Truth. So for Dwight Stone, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.